The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Please be advised that this radio interview may contain discussions related to sensitive topics, including mental health challenges and suicide. Listener discretion is advised, and if you or someone you know is struggling with these issues, please consider seeking support from a mental health professional or a helpline, such as the Samaritans, who can be reached on 116 123.
Hello and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Lydia El-Khoury, and today on The Parents Show, I'm really delighted to be joined by Lisa Paskoulis and Gareth Hill from the Molly Rose Foundation. Now, Lisa is their lead trainer and Gareth is the online safety expert at the Molly Rose Foundation. Lisa and Gareth, thanks a million for joining us on The Parents Show today. It's a pleasure to have you both on.
It's lovely to speak to you too.
Thank you for having us. I should say I'm Head of Communications.
Head of Communications. Brilliant. Thanks for the heads up. So I want to talk about Molly Rose Russell before we start. Lisa, can you tell us a little bit about Molly, please?
Yeah, I think the best way to talk about Molly is through her dad, Ian Russell. So I've written down some words that he uses quite often when he's being interviewed. So I'd like to just read them out. He tells us that around 200 British school children take their own lives each year, and Molly was one of them. He says, I have no doubt that Instagram helped kill my daughter. At the time, she seemed to be a very busy, ordinary teenager. She was 14. She was future-looking. She was enthusiastic. She handed in her homework that night. And when we woke up the next morning, she was dead. Since her death, we've been able to look back and just scratch the surface of some of the social media accounts that she had been following. Ian recalls a picture that he saw, and it's this posting on Instagram said, the wording was, this world is so cruel and I don't want to see it anymore. He reads another one that says, I'm done. I'm done trying. I'm done fighting. I'm done being a disappointment. I'm done being a problem. I'm done making mistakes. I'm done with my flaws. I'm done with my feelings. I'm done living. And at the time when Molly accessed that post, it already had 3,032 likes. So that means that many people were clicking on it. She left us some notes, which I think we're very lucky to have. Notes after her death, because she tried to explain how she felt. I'm the problem in everyone's life. I love you all. Stay strong. And he ends with, bless you, Molly.
It's just heartbreaking, Lisa.
It is. And, you know, obviously, that's his words and that's the way. But every time he speaks, and I've been with the foundation since the beginning, since Molly's death, every time he speaks, the power of his words just create such silence. And, you know, one of the things that really resonates with me is that Molly was lead in her school play, and the play was going live. They were going to do the school play the week after Molly died, and Molly was word perfect. She'd learnt her script inside out. She was word perfect. And so the pain that she was suffering was greater than, you know, than being what she really aspired to, the lead in the school play. And that, for me, speaks volumes.
And she wasn't a problem at all for anyone. Far from it.
No, she was the youngest of three sisters, much loved. Yeah. And still today, a mystery. Apart from the information that we had that she accessed online, a mystery as to really why she made the decision that she made. Yeah.
It must be heartbreaking for her family, for her friends. It's hard to comprehend. It is really hard to comprehend. And that's why we wanted to invite you on The Parents Show to talk about the work that the Molly Rose Foundation is doing about this topic and about the impact of social media on young people, because it's serious. It's very serious, and we all need to be aware about it. So, Lisa, can you tell us what Molly Rose Foundation does and your activities, please?
Absolutely. So currently we sort of divide into two sections. So there is the training and education part of the Molly Rose Foundation. And then we have the online safety campaign that is the other part of the work that we do. And they come together, but they're actually quite separate in how we access schools. So currently at the moment, we have a wonderful offer which can be found online at the Molly Rose Foundation that we offer some activities. And one of the real big successes is our Bag of Happiness. And our Bag of Happiness is an opportunity for a class of children. So we target it to Key Stage 2, which is year 2 to 6 in primary schools. And we invite them to come along and create a bag of happy feelings. So the things that they enjoy doing, the things that they love. And this is a resource that in times of when they're feeling a bit down, a bit sad, they can dip into this bag and remember what it feels like to feel happy. So if we think about, you know, if we eat or drink something that we really enjoy, it gives you that warm, fuzzy feeling. It gives you that sense of well-being. And we can do that with even if you smell something you enjoy or eat, that gives you that pleasurable feeling. So that's what we're doing with the Bag of Happiness. And it's been amazing. Very well received. I've seen the most beautiful things in Bags of Happiness. We also extend that to senior school and we call it a Bag of Appreciation. So you might want to put a note in about somebody that's done something nice for you. So because we all do lovely things, but we don't really think about the small things. So it could be, because I do a lot of work in school, I'll refer to school. So it could be that somebody opens a door for you every day when you're carrying all your books, but you don't even think about, you might say thank you, but actually a little bit more just to say how much you appreciate that might be a lovely thing to put in their Bag of Happiness. So it's a really wonderful activity and I absolutely love going in and working with schools to deliver it. The course, we play happy music and we think about happy times. We also offer a range of courses for parents and for anyone that interacts with young people, from Mental Health First Aid England youth mental health first aid training. So how to open a conversation, how to close a conversation, how to refer people to resources and how to seek for help in a world where it's quite difficult. You know, you think about CAMHS, for example, we're looking at waiting lists of anything from 2 years to 2 years, 6 months. So how else can we support and help people to get our young people in need up to the right services? So we spend a lot of time talking about resources. We offer suicide first aid. And we offer parent talks to talk about things that really matter, like how much sleep do we need? You know, very important.
Yeah, very important topic.
What can I give my child to eat before they go to bed that won't stop them from sleeping? So, you know, a rice cake instead of a chocolate biscuit. And so lots of really important information that, you know, tools that can help us help our children without being just normal life.
They're brilliant and so practical and important. Ooh. And it's easy when you're kind of so busy being a parent to forget about the basics. Like sleep is such an important role to play in mental health and well-being. And I love your Bag of Happiness. I mean, I love the concept of that because again, it's so easy to just forget to stop and appreciate the good things, the small things in life.
Absolutely. And parents don't, often parents say to me, what can I do to help my children? And I say, it's time, back to basics, you know, have a puzzle on the table where everybody can dip in, you know, walk the dogs together, go shopping together, you know, make time to do things together. And that's what our children want from us. We just have to think about it. You know, material things are lovely, but not what they need. So all available, all can be found on the Molly Rose Foundation. The email comes directly into my inbox and I answer very quickly. So we would welcome anyone seeking anything that we offer. It would be lovely for them to get in touch with us.
Thanks a million, Lisa. And we're so lucky you're actually collaborating with two schools in Hertfordshire, which is where we're based.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us what the goals of your activities are. I mean, I think I pick it up. You're trying to help parents engage with their children, make sure they're checking in on them to make sure that their mental health is okay. Anything else that's important in
the goals of the organization.
Yeah, I mean, our interactions with schools are really important because we can offer anything from delivering an assembly around well-being and happy topics through to working, delivering activities. I've helped in lunchtime clubs with well-being activities where children that don't really feel comfortable in the playground might want to come into a resource, that a room where they can just sort of maybe do some colouring. So we look at areas like that. I often stay behind and talk to parents about things that they can access very quickly and how they can improve family relationships. And we offer the parent talk. So the schools that we've been working with, Bromwich Primary School and Oxywood, amazing. I spent two wonderful days there last week doing exactly those things, working right from assembly right through to the bags of happiness, right through to meet and greet the parents when they're picking up their children that may have any questions at the end of the day. And we will continue to collaborate with schools in Hertfordshire. You know, we're reaching out to all schools. As our team gets bigger, that will be able to develop. But Hertfordshire is an area that we've really liked to support schools in.
Thanks a million, Lisa. So, Gareth, can I talk to you about the online situation? Because obviously that's inextricably linked to what we're talking about today in relation to Molly Rose. What do you think about the current situation online? And I know the Molly Rose Foundation is really committed to making the online space safer for children, for everybody.
Absolutely. One of our goals at Molly Rose Foundation is to have a safe online world for children and to make an impact to end suicide where technology plays a factor, as it was in Molly's life. Sadly, a lot of the content, a lot of the systems and processes that drove that content to Molly when she was younger is still online. Much of that content in the final days of her life is still available. We see report after report where young people are exposed to suicide and self-harm content, to extremely depressive content, to violent content, and it's simply not good enough. Sometimes it ends in tragedy, as it did with Molly. Sometimes it inhibits children's lives. But just this week, we've seen a horrific case of Samina Halliwell up in Southport, and she was bullied, targeted, attacked through social media, videos of her being attacked, uploaded onto social media after she reported a sexual assault, and she was groomed on Snapchat by an older boy. So there's a litany of failures with social media companies in this case where she took her life, sadly. And no one has been held accountable there. And companies continue not to be held accountable. And this is the issue, really, that we are fighting for. So we do a lot of campaigning and policy work looking for stronger online safety regulation and trying to encourage politicians and regulators to really stand up for UK children and families here.
And we're lucky in the sense that that need is being answered at the moment in the shape of the Online Safety Act. I know from what I've read in the news that it probably could be more forceful than it is in its present form. And it could probably do more to protect children, but it will come into effect in the first half of 2025. Do you expect to see improvements as it takes effect or comes into force in the UK?
So the Online Safety Act has been a long time coming into force. Sort of Molly Rose Foundation campaigned for it and, you know, celebrated it coming into force, when it was put on the statute. But last year, we have some concerns that it's not robust enough. We have concerns with the way that the regulator are implementing the Online Safety Act and in an unambitious way, where the focus really isn't on children, but has been too much focus on what this means for companies and making sure that they aren't too put out, I guess, by the regulation. So the Online Safety Act will make a difference. It's already started to make a difference. We've seen sort of things like teen accounts on Instagram, companies starting to think about how they can make their online spaces safer for children. But it should be seen as the floor, not the ceiling. And we've a long way to go. And I think as technology develops, as companies change the things they're doing, you know, we recently saw an announcement from Facebook where they're stopping fact checking and withdrawing a lot of moderation for a lot of content. So that announcement would mean that content which Molly saw, depressive content isn't being moderated, isn't being downranked, so is still going to be available to young people. So tech companies have changed the game a little bit as we look at some of the external factors. So we need regulators and the politicians to also change the game and step up. So we'd like to see further regulation. We'd like to see a strengthened Online Safety Act come into force that really embeds a duty of care on tech companies so that they have to proactively think about how their products cause risk to children and put measures in place to protect. We'd also like to see a duty of conduct to really look at the conduct of companies so they can't simply withdraw safety measures. They can't simply withdraw content moderation without the regulator coming after them.
Yeah, I mean, who could argue with anything you're saying, Gareth? I mean, it's we're talking about young people being exposed to content that they shouldn't be, harmful, potentially deadly content online. There shouldn't even be a need to lobby for this. It should be there. We should be able to trust the platforms to protect our children. And I hear your concerns. And do you think that once the Online Safety Act comes into effect properly, that it will then be tweaked and improved to make it the robust and thorough regulatory mechanism that we need?
You're right. Children have a right to be online and have a right to enjoy all the benefits that the online world offers them. But they should be able to do that safely. Me and Lisa were talking yesterday about young people, and they know the risks that they face online, but they're fed up of having to protect themselves from it, and they want companies to protect them. They want the tech platforms to protect them. In terms of where we're going with the Online Safety Act, so Ofcom developed codes of practice which companies have to follow. And one of the key issues is that companies can follow these codes of practice and then say they're compliant with legislation. The codes of practice which Ofcom have put out so far are very unambitious. A lot of companies could actually scale back what they're doing and say they still comply with these codes of practice. So we are waiting for the final child safety code of practice to come in, which should be before Easter to be published. That should be before Easter. We're not holding out too much hope that it's going to be a lot stronger than the draft one. So yes, there are things that the regulator can do to strengthen those and to make it stronger. But we really need political action and political leadership here. I think what we've seen from successive governments is online safety being treated a bit like a hot potato, where they know the need and they want to say they're doing something, but are really unwilling to take the forceful, decisive action that's required, and have too long sort of been too concerned about the lobbying of tech companies, the lobbying of sort of sectors such as free speech and privacy sectors, which, let's be clear, online safety shouldn't be traded off for tech companies or for privacy and free speech, and they can coexist completely together. There's no reason where safety and other sectors coexist together with those things. So really, we need further legislation. We need the UK government, need Prime Minister himself to commit to further legislation. Ian Russell wrote to the Prime Minister recently and said that the UK was going backwards on online safety. And that was really, really powerful. And I know he's since spoken to the Prime Minister, and the Prime Minister is listening, but what we need now is action.
It makes complete sense. And of course, you know, everybody has the right to freedom of expression, but everybody also has the right to live a life free of abuse and threats and online harm. So, and as you say, they're not mutually exclusive. So, yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I'm sure our listeners agree more and are delighted that the Molly Rose Foundation is leading the charge on this really important topic, because it's no matter at what level online harms our children are being exposed to, it's doing damage to a greater or lesser extent. Gareth, I wanted to talk to you about what your dream scenario is for the online situation. So I'm going to give you a magic wand, and I want to know, what would you do to protect young people in the online space if you could just do whatever you could?
It's a very good question. And I feel that we shouldn't be too sort of fatalistic here, that there are things that can be done. And parents, as we're on a parent show, you know, it's really important that you're having conversations about online safety with children. talking about what they're doing online as you talk about what they do every day. But as I said earlier, parents and children are fed up with having to protect themselves and protect their families from something that should be regulated and should be safe. So if I had a magic wand, I think I would say what is needed is leadership. We need Keir Starmer to show leadership and really take this under his wing. We've seen far too many examples of lives lost because the online world is unsafe. We've seen far too many examples of lives damaged irreversibly because the online world is unsafe. But we have a new government. They've got 4 years now left, 5 years left to really take this under their wing, bring in new, stronger legislation, bring in a new Online Safety Act, and finally stand up for UK children and UK families and say that enough is enough.
You couldn't have put it better. Thanks a million, Gareth. And thanks, Lisa, to you too for the great work you're doing in our schools to raise awareness for this issue. It's so important, and social media is not going away, far from it. It's playing an ever bigger role in children's and young people's lives.
And I think it's really, you know, we should make it really clear that the Molly Rose Foundation is not about taking away anything. It's about improving safety. And, you know, I meet many young people. I was telling Gareth Rees, I met a lovely group of young people after I did a presentation that came up and said, have you heard about this? And do you know we can do this online? And how are we able to do this? You know, why are we able to access this stuff? We shouldn't be seeing this stuff. And that's coming from them. So, you know, if you buy something online and you use your card, often you'll ask, do you want to make this transaction? Are you going in the right direction? Is this safe? We don't do that for social media. So lots of work to be done.
Absolutely.
I think that's a really important point, that there's lots of debate at the moment about withdrawing social media for children under 16 and saying and withdrawing access from the online world. And, you know, that's not the answer. The answer is not to punish children. The answer is to make what has become a very big part of our society safe, just as offline worlds are made safe, just as safeguards are put in place in the offline world. So we really know how much children benefit from being online, whether that's for learning, education, friendships, and they demand that they want to be able to do that in a safe environment.
Absolutely. So if schools are listening or parents are listening and they want to get in touch with the Molly Rose Foundation to get the bag of happiness into their school or to support the lobbying work that you're doing, Gareth, together with Ian, what's the best route?
So I think with regard to getting in touch with Lisa, if you email training@mollyrosefoundation.org, and please, you know, follow us on social media to find out about our campaigning work, see what we're doing as well. We have news page on the website. We can keep up with our work. But also, you know, if people want to get involved, you know, write to your MP as well. Write to your MP, let them know what you're thinking, let them know that you support our goals, you support the call for further legislation, that you support Keir Starmer being a leader on this and using his tenure to finally make the online world a lot safer for children.
Brilliant. Gareth, Lisa, thanks so much for joining us on The Parents Show. It's been great to chat to you.
Many thanks for inviting us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much for having us.
As we've mentioned, if you or someone you know is struggling with these issues, please consider seeking support from a mental health professional or a helpline, such as the Samaritans, who can be reached on 116 123.
We'll take a quick break now on The Parents Show on Mix 92.6.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
The Beaumont School Sustainability Club have planted trees, protected areas for rewilding, and ensured there's plenty for pollinators. But it's not all plain sailing. Amanda Yorworth from our Environment Matters programme spoke to the sustainability team at Beaumont School, with their lead, Trudy Gorham, physics technician and biodiversity rewilding lead, Dr. Lucy Bomfrey, and and Sustainability Club members Tilly, Rosie, Dania, Evie, Darcy, Bella, Eliza and Phoebe about what they've done to make their school grounds more biodiverse, the problems they have overcome, and how working together on this has helped them in an environmentally challenging time.
Now, Beaumont School on Hatfield Road on the east side of St Albans is a senior school with about 1,600 students. Members of the school Sustainability Club have made use of the free online National Educational Nature Park resources to help them improve the biodiversity of their school grounds by planting trees, hedges, flowers for pollinators and allowing an area to start rewilding. Now, the National Education Nature Park website says that it aims to empower children and young people to make a positive difference to both their own and nature's future. I was keen to find out more about what the Sustainability Club had achieved and whether they'd learned anything that they could pass on to other schools. So I went along to Beaumont School to meet their school sustainability lead, Trudy Gorham, their physics technician who also leads on their biodiversity rewilding project, Dr. Lucy Bomfrey, and Sustainability Club members Tilly, Rosie, Dania, Evie, Darcy, Bella, Eliza and Phoebe. So thank you for welcoming me to Beaumont School today. It's great to be here. But I'm intrigued to know how this all started. Can you help us with that?
Sure. So my name is Trudy Gorham. I'm a science teacher and sustainability lead here at Beaumont School. And it was about 3-4 years ago where a few members of staff and some students and sixth formers particularly were really inspired by the Wildlife Trust's pledge to do rewilding 30% of the grounds by 2030 and thought we could do that at Beaumont School. And we started thinking about which parts of our grounds we could allocate as a rewilding area. And there was a bit of a wandering around trying to find a good spot. And then we found our spot. And then from then, we decided to seek help from other knowledgeable people, like other members of staff that knew a bit more about rewilding. So Dr. Bomfrey, our physics technician, has great knowledge on all things wildflowers and native plants. And we had a member of the Wildlife Trust come in as well. We did a survey of the site. And then since then, we've really developed the area using many different plants that we've added in over the last three years, with lots of students getting involved as well and helping out with the planting and the digging. And then I think it was 2023 when the Nature Park was launched, and we thought that was a brilliant initiative to then officially map our school and highlight all the areas that we could rewild. And we've since put it into our school sustainability strategy to try and get as many areas rewilded as well. And it's kind of just snowballed, and we've got more members of staff and more students involved. And it's really nice to see the changes over time as well.
It really must be. So the Nature Park programme, Dr. Pomfrey, could you tell us a little bit about that and why you decided to use this?
Yeah, I think it's a government-run organisation and it aims to link lots of schools around the country to make one big wildlife corridor. And we thought at Beaumont we're ideally placed to contribute to that. And we also spotted that places like the Woodland Trust and the local council in St Albans give away trees periodically. So we made use of that offering and took the opportunity to use all these happy volunteers to get as many trees put in and, as Trudy said, some wildflowers and also hedgerows to try and make this sort of nationwide nature park.
That sounds fantastic. It's great that you feel that you've got connectivity with other schools and it's not just a little blob of biodiversity working by itself. So one of the things that you did right to start off with was to form an eco-council with a rep from each class. Can somebody say why that was important to involve all the years?
Tilly Burridge. I think it was helpful. I think we decided that we needed someone from each year to like bring everyone together, so it wasn't just certain people trying to lead it and we could get everyone's opinions in rather than just the 10 of us that were trying to lead it. I think it really helped because it means that we can all, like, I keep saying it connects, but it brings us all together.
Yeah, indeed. It must be nice to feel like you were involving a lot of the school there. So you've made a lot of changes and we've heard a little bit about them. I wondered if anybody could tell us specifically about some of the changes. How about the grass strips?
I'm Rosie. We've introduced a lot of wildflowers throughout the school, mostly in the spring introducing seeds. We've also planted a lot of saplings. Having to protect them from being mown down was quite an effort. We've also introduced bug hotels and many other things just to tie it all together.
And do you have any way of knowing if your efforts have been successful? Have any surveys been done sort of before and after to see whether there is more wildlife in the grounds?
We've had the A-level students, just very spontaneously as part of one of their lessons, they've done a survey on the grassland and on the field, which we've since just kind of cordoned it off and we've left it unmown for a year. And we're going to go back next year. I think we can even take the same bunch of students back to check what diversity we've managed to let flourish by just stopping the mowers.
So has the improvements that you've made to the school grounds, have they been used in learning in any other ways? Has anybody been involved in any other lessons?
The Year 9 GCSE biology curriculum includes sampling as a technique. So we take students out to do a required practical for sampling in different parts of the school. And some of the classes have gone to those specific areas and have looked for different species of grass in the quadrats. But it's not in the curriculum as much as I would like to. So that's definitely a next step forward, is to try and embed this further with the help of not just other science teachers, but maybe other subjects as well, to get their students out and get involved in things like data collection or like data analysis as well, if it's something we can provide for other subjects. So it's definitely work in progress, but hopefully going to improve across the curriculum.
Okay. And how about the more sort of fun benefits? Has anybody got anything to say about what the improvements mean to them and whether they've enjoyed actually doing the work?
I'm Darcy and I've enjoyed doing it, and I think it's a really fun thing in the group of environment because it like has stopped the pollution in the air, which is damaging the city for the later on, and it's also giving just a fun activity for people to do. I also think we did a bird watch at one point. Yeah.
That sounds good, and great that there's some birds that are here in the school grounds. How about anybody else and what they think about the improvements?
My name is Denaya Zotov, and all the improvements, they've been really fun to do, especially when we go out behind the schools and we can plant trees and find small plants that we can put by the windowsill in some classrooms.
My name is Eve Luenz, and I think it was really nice because it's nice to see many birds come to this school, and it may be challenging, like when we try to remove the tree guards, but it's worth it when we can see all the animals that visit.
Sorry, just to add, it's really fun to get a hands-on approach outside in the lunch and breaks, because a lot of school, you're cramped up inside of the classrooms, and it's really nice just to get stuck in, get your hands dirty, and it's a fun activity that brings everyone together.
Okay, and have you had any problems with the maintenance or looking after the new things that you've planted?
Yeah, so obviously quite labour intensive having to plant them all in the first place, but we have to do a lot of ground prep. I say we, mostly Dr. Pomfrey, has to do a lot of ground prep and to decide where the plants are going. And then we have to protect them from the ground staff that maintain the whole of the school grounds. And it's been really tricky trying to make it really clear which areas need to be protected and which areas shouldn't be mown. And we have lost a lot of saplings because the strimmers have damaged them. So we've gone to all sorts of creative efforts to make it really obvious. We've used brightly coloured tape. We've tried to, as I say, rescue tree guards from other planting areas around the school to reposition them in place, and just make frequent conversation between school staff and the ground staff that we use to keep it in their minds all the time that it's an important thing that they need to try and protect, as well as doing their job everywhere else as well. But it has been tricky.
Well, that sounds like a learning that another school could take from you there. I wonder if you had any other things that you've learnt in the journey that you've made that you think other schools might find helpful.
I'm Dala, and I do think the Eco Council idea is really good because it means that people from all years and all classes can get involved, and it just brings a wider group of people together.
Okay. And apart from the people in the Eco Council, what do you think the other people in the school, what do the other students and staff think?
I feel like maybe so the other students in the school, even if they're not part of sustainability or the Eco Council, they could still try and help him with the events, like maybe once in and every while, because they are put on the bulletin for people to know about if they want to do it.
I'm Eliza Parsons. I think that, to be honest, the sustainability club, at least with sixth form, it's not really talked about a whole lot. I don't know if it's something that's unique to like just some form tutors, but a lot of them don't read out the bulletin. And so a lot of things that we do, like, people just don't know are happening. There have been a few times that, like, even some of my friends have been, like, wondering what I've been doing out and about with, like, a shovel. And on the same day there was an announcement saying that we were going to be planting trees that day. So I think that, like, there's not very much publicity around it, and I think more people would get involved if they knew what we were doing. There have been a few people who, when we have been doing plantings, have just come over and said, hey, can I help out? And I think more people would love to get involved.
Yeah, I'd just quickly say, you've been a great advert, all of you. And I think you're the best advert for it. Your cheery faces with your spades and looking like you're having a lovely time. So just keep doing what you're doing.
So it sounds like you think that actually you could get even more people involved if more students knew about what you're doing. And perhaps that's something you think other schools could learn from.
I think definitely within the upper school, because so many people are coming from different schools into sixth form, they like don't know what has been going on here for the past years. And so there's like less of an opportunity to know what to join, I guess, is really the difficulty there. Yeah, so more publicity.
Okay. So you've obviously already achieved quite a lot with the grants here at Beaumont, and you've got activities going forwards, including your surveys and further things within the curriculum, and obviously maintaining what you've got. But do you have any plans for more eco projects within the school grounds?
Yes, we've always got plans. We're hopefully going to have more people to help with the plans. But a big exciting project on the horizon is that the school is part of a school rebuilding project. So in the next 18 months to 2 years, there's going to be a lot of changes on the grounds that I'm really, really hopeful the Eco Council and the Sustainability Club can get involved in the planning. For example, there's an area I know that's been designated as a landscaped area, but we don't yet know what that looks like. So I would love for the students to get involved in maybe designing it and thinking about whether we could include a pond or maybe some vegetable growing areas. And I think we're part of the EcoSchool award system, and it's set up in lots of different categories, and one of those is all about school grounds. And so we're using that as a guide to think, what have we currently not got in our school and what would we like to get in the future? So we're using that as a bit of a tick sheet. But yeah, lots of ideas, and it'd be really nice to see how that changes over the next few years.
Oh, sounds exciting. Really looking forward to hearing all about that.
My name's Phoebe, and I just wanted to say that joining Sustainability Club and Eco Council, because I'm in year 11 now, and I only joined, I think, late in year 10, which is when I kind of first heard about it through the Eco Council Assembly when it was advertised to me. And since joining, it's just been really nice to meet other people who care so much. And like you say, get involved in things and, you know, really take action to try and like make our school a better place.
Okay. I think it's really fun because it adds loads of new experiences to everyone. So we've done the thing at university and like get to learn loads of new stuff and like other schools, and there's a youth cop tomorrow, which is really nice because it means that we can just like so many new experiences for everyone to try, and it opens a whole new world.
I wondered whether just working with your fantastic group here has helped any of you cope with the kind of worries about what's happening in the wider environment.
With Sustainability Club, it's helped me realise that, like, day to day at our meetings, it doesn't really necessarily feel like we're accomplishing a whole lot. Like, we might plant maybe 10 trees or something, or just be planning for a new project. But, like, overall, it, like, really adds up, and the little actions really end up making a difference, like a measurable one.
I just wanted to say that, and so at first I wasn't really that worried about the environment. I thought I would just find a way, but then my friend, she convinced me to join, and it made me really think about what my actions, and it made me really care a lot more, and now I really care about the environment, and I wish I joined it sooner.
It helps me deal because I'm obsessed with marine life, and every time if I go on my computer, I can see how tough it is for animals out there, like turtles getting trapped in netting and drowning. And being in a group has helped me because I can talk about these things to other people who understand the trouble that the world is in.
Yeah, I also really like, I care about the environment because now it's getting really bad, and Sustainability Club is really good because people who go there can tell their friends, and then those people can come, even if it's just for a day, like maybe it can be five people or more, and it can really help if they help to plant trees and other things like that, or remove old tree guards.
Can I just say, as a teacher, this group helped my eco anxiety because I struggle with it and I feel like I want to make the biggest difference that I can. And it's just been so inspiring to hear everyone speaking today because it just reinforces that idea that we're trying to offer our students the most opportunities possible to get involved in something where they can really have agency in a really scary problem and feel like they can get control over something that isn't otherwise kind of a big, scary, uncontrollable problem. And I think hearing their experiences being so positive makes me feel better about the future. And I feel like at least if they're going away feeling like they've made a difference and they have the ability to have positive action, then that's nothing but a good thing. And by the sounds of it, it's having a bit of a ripple effect as well, which is really nice to see.
A huge thank you to Beaumont School Sustainability Club. What an awesome bunch they are. And yes, I did ask where the boys were, and the club members shrugged and said that the boys had helped with some of the physical tasks like tree planting, and they hoped that they'd be more involved in the future. It was good to hear that Beaumont School Sustainability Club were making good use of resources out there that have been specially created to help schools like theirs take effective steps to become more sustainable. The Education Nature Park project and the Eco Schools scheme. And I'll put links to both of those and also to the St. Albans District Sustainable Schools Network into the notes that go with the podcast of this show and that you'll find on the podcast page of mix926.com. So do you know a school that's doing great things for the environment? Well, it would be fantastic to hear from them too. So do get in touch and let me know about them. Via email, I'm on amanda.yorworth@mix926.com. Thank you for listening.
Amanda Yorworth talking to the Beaumont School Sustainability team there. Now, it's World Book Day this Thursday, the 6th of March, and local mum and children's author, Jennifer Sprinks, popped into the Mix 92.6 studios to mark the day and spoke to Ian Pritchard about her writing and her new book aimed at toddlers, Furiosaurus, about an angry dinosaur.
So World Book Day is on the 6th of March this year, and joining us in the studio is Jennifer Sprinks, who is an author as well as a mum in St Albans. So welcome to Mix 92.6, Jennifer.
Thank you, Ian.
And World Book Day, what does that mean to you? Tell us a little bit about that and also about the sort of thing that you write.
Okay, thank you. I'm mum first and foremost, so books really are a very important part of our family, obviously an important part of bedtime routine for children. Sometimes now my children are reading more complex texts and less of the picture books, but my five-year-old is still very much into picture books. My eldest is now starting to read some of the more middle grade fiction, but still pictures are very much important to that, to his reading.
Yeah.
So really I'm here because I love books. And I'm an author as well as a journalist by trade. And because of my love for books and reading with the children, I decided to start what I call my passion project, is writing some picture books myself. And so and as part of World Book Day, I've started to go into schools and do some readings and just really getting children enthused again about books. Because the whole premise now for World Book Day and the reason it began is to try and get children to just read for fun. And to love reading, not seeing it as a chore, not reading because they have to, reading what they want to.
Mm-hmm. And so for people who maybe don't know straight away what a picture book is, actually, some of us out there might not really know what a book is because we watch so much television. But a picture book, how would you describe and define that?
Yeah, I think it's a really important relationship between text and pictures. Mm. Really, I've actually, because I still just draw stick people, I've had to commission illustrators for mine. But you're very much working in getting the pictures to tell as much of the story as the text. Mm. Mm. And sometimes the pictures do tell the story more than the text.
Yeah.
But it's trying to marry those two up, and that's where the craft is, really.
Yes. And are we talking about the sort of book that I don't know, Julia Donaldson and Axel Scheffler would have produced?
Absolutely.
So the whole sort of background is the picture and then the text is overlaid on the top.
That's
of that.
Right, yes. And that predominantly it tends to be for children who are kind of in the toddler to up to, you know, baby toddler up to maybe six years of age, and then they start to shift, the curriculum shifts children onto middle grade and just really looking at text and font rather than pictures. What we are starting to see is some children at 5 or 6 years old are losing that love for reading because their pictures are starting to go.
Yeah.
And they're not ready for it. They're just not ready to see that. So there's new books out on the market like Dog Man that have more comic style. And I think they really serve an important purpose there of keeping that love for reading going when the children are 7, 8, 9 years of age.
Yes. And so is that the age group that you focus on for your writing?
So with my picture books, so far I've been focusing really on the toddler range. Yeah. And I've got one book called Furiosaurus, The Angry Dinosaur. That really can go up to age 7. And that's really 2 to 7 year olds. And I've been into schools where I've helped children talk about their feelings. Just, you know, books are a really good prompt for talking and discussion as well. I think people so much think about reading as whether you can read the words. And I think sometimes with schools and parents, we get hung up on whether children can read. And I think we're losing that sort of the focus of reading is there for pleasure. It's helping us with our vocabulary, but it's also prompting discussions with parents and children. And my book is really about helping children to talk about their feelings and articulate what they're feeling. So The Angry Dinosaur, I've been asked to go in and help children with transition, going from maybe reception to year one, very tricky transition. Equally, year one to year two is a huge transition for children.
Why is that?
I think it's so much as expected of them. We start school at a very young age in the UK. And I think there is quite a big leap from year one to two in terms of really starting to get them ready for key stage two. They're starting to have to do a lot more reading and writing. There's less time for play, less play learning through play. And I think it's just such a lot of focus that is so hard. And I think children feel a bit anxious about that transition and saying goodbye to their year one teacher and what they know and love. So sometimes those feelings can manifest in anger because they're so scared. That fear can actually show itself in a different way.
Yes, and having a book to take a child through that experience safely and while they're being read to or trying to find some of the words themselves, that can be helpful.
Exactly, definitely. And, you know, one of the words I use quite a lot is that, you know, it's through a stompy sort of angry dinosaur is furious. And he's really furious. And children that age don't normally know that word. But it's another one. It's just showing you can stomp and you can kick and scream. It's okay to feel angry. But obviously, we don't want to be kicking others or hurting others. So it's very much about we can feel this anger. It's okay. But we need to now look at a way of what can we do to manage it when we're feeling that we can talk about it and we can find ways to calm down. So I think it's just helping children to not feel alienated by those feelings and that feeling of anger.
So what's that book again, Jennifer?
Just Furiosaurus, so the Angry Dinosaur.
And if people wanted to find a copy for themselves, how would they do that?
It is on Amazon. I think you can buy it online as well, Waterstones, some of the other main bookshops. It's also on my website, jennifersprings.co.uk.
Okay, and any other books in the pipeline?
So I've written another one. It was published at the end of September last year, and that's very much more for babies and toddlers. It's a very fun book. It's much more simplistic in nature. It's very much about trying to get children to brush their teeth. And it's called Mouse in My Mouth.
Excellent.
So it's kind of my children really, I suppose, the inspiration, particularly my daughter. She would do everything but actually brush her teeth, pirouetting, dancing. And so I had to use animals to try and get her to open her mouth by saying, oh, is that a penguin in there? And so by just injecting humour, really, I got her to want to brush her teeth. And so that's what this book is about, really, going through all the different animals. The boy's pondering, what was that squeaking sound? And really, it's just because he's brushed his teeth so well.
Oh, so, excellent.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, well, Jennifer, thanks so much for sharing all of that with us. And good luck with the toothbrushing novel.
Thank you.
That sounds absolutely fabulous. And good luck as well with Furiosaurus, because everything you say about the small children in transition, struggling with new things and all those feelings that come through, that's tough stuff for everybody to deal with, not just them. Uh-huh. But so thanks very much for coming in and sharing all of that. And just say again, Jennifer, where people can go to find out a little bit more about your books.
Okay. Well, Mouse in My Mouth is more widely available, but if people want to visit my website, it's www.jenniferspringks, that's sprinks.co.uk.
Fantastic. Well, Jennifer, thanks again for coming in and sharing all of that with us on Mix 92.6.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Ian Pritchard talking there to Jennifer Springs, St Albans mum and children's author.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.